So we're ending this series called Better Together, just talking about doing life alone. And I get it. Some of you in this room, this is easier for you. Some of you, it's way more difficult. A lot of times we equate it to our personality types. Well, I'm an introvert. I'm an extrovert. Some things are easier. I'm going to just say this up front. I get it. I'm married an introvert. I married a woman that finds being by herself is great. I'm the opposite. I find strength in being around people. And there's all these challenges as you're in relationship with people to figure this stuff out. So I understand that we're in this kind of this conflict place. Okay? But I also know that bad things happen when we isolate ourselves. I also know that when we're alone and we're fighting alone, bad things happen. And it might not be immediate, but over time, as we isolate, that when we do life together, when we draw strength from one another, when we look at people that are for us and not against us, something powerful happens. And something has happened, you know, in the last year or so at Life Community Church, where we've experienced a lot of growth from numerical to financial to relational. All of these things have happened. And one of the cool things, in my opinion, that happened over the summer, and this is unusual, being in the church world for a lot of years of my life, I've rarely seen this happen, but we actually grew the most over the summer. For a lot of people, my friends included, pastors that I gather around, it's kind of a downtime. People are traveling. Our highest attended weekend happened in July. Okay, so again, there's some growth. So it's caused me to look at some things. And some of you got an email from me this past week where we're talking about some things we're just changing. Some of these things are going to change over the next couple months where I'm going to be presenting some things to you that I'm asking you to not react to. I'm asking you to pray through. Okay? Because you know yourself better and you're a horrible reactor. Ask your kids. Okay? Ask my kids. That's why they go to mom a lot. She responds well. Dad tends to react. I'm going to present some things to you. I'm asking you in these next couple months that you pray about what I'm saying to you. Okay? Because I figure if you got a problem with it, you take it to Jesus first, then we're going to be good. Okay, so here's the first change. We're changing our service times to 9 and 11. Okay, that happens in 2 weeks. Okay, doesn't affect you because you're here right now. But it does kind of affect you because a lot of times 9 a.m., which we highly encourage, 9 a.m., you're talkers. Something happens after coffee gets in you. You're hanging out, you're talking, which is great. It's awesome, but 10:30 crowd can't find a parking spot. Okay, so now they're parking down the street, and they're like, hey, listen, we love coming to 10:30, but I cannot find a spot. So we're widening that time frame to 11 o'clock. We're also hoping some 11 o'clock people now become 9 a.m. people. We're hoping to convert them. We're hoping that make morning people out of sleeping in late people. Okay, again, doesn't affect you because you are at God's service right now, okay? This is the service he loves. This is the service he shows up in. This is also the service that I say a lot of things off the cuff that I don't say at the second service, okay? There's a reason for that. This typically is not the service we put up online, okay? All right, so when I look at the Bible and I look at growth, Acts chapter 6 talks about this in one verse. It says this, but as the believers rapidly multiplied, there were rumblings of discontent, okay? Here's what happens. When we grow, there tends to be rumblings of discontent. At this moment in the stage of the church was multiplying real quick. You can look at the first six chapters from chapter 1 to 120 people to chapter 6 where it says 3,000 were being added daily. The crazy thing about all of this is there's persecution happening. Meaning, people that were coming to church, for the most part, were being persecuted. Yet the Bible says they were still growing, right? It doesn't say they had the best coffee, they grew. It doesn't say they had the best worship, they grew. It said they were losing their lives, and the church was growing. Yet, here's what I know. that when the enemy wants to attack the church, most of the time it's not from the outside in, it's from the inside out. Okay? Tends to be the problem when churches start having arguments, has nothing to do with what's going on in culture, has everything to do with people's opinions on the inside. So I've heard things like, oh, I don't really like the carpet. Well, nobody asked you because we don't really care. Okay? The fact that you come in thinking that you can throw your opinion around is partly your problem. Okay? So again, what is that? Well, that's rumblings of discontent. It's making mountains, right, out of molehills. It's making things bigger than what they should be. This is what's happening in the church. And what's happening? People are upset that they're not being taken care of. People are being upset that their family members are dying. There are people in the hospital. There are people that aren't being fed, and they're discriminating, and all these things are happening. What? This rumbling of discontent, all while the church is growing. Okay? So there's this opportunity that's in front of us to go, I don't like that. The Bible says in these first five verses, it says they made an adjustment. And probably the biggest miracle in all of the Bible, the blind, that's great, the deaf, it's great. But it says the apostles threw out an idea. And here's the miracle. Everyone liked the idea. You guys, that is a miracle when you get people together. Because we're living in a time where rumblings of discontent can take over. Where murmuring and complaining can take over. We have to be a group of people that come together and say, we have to do this for the common good. Listen, I've said this in the Who We Are lunch. I've said it to people. If we want to talk about things that change, I look out in this room right now and there's 100 things I would change in this building. There's 100 things that I would change about how we do certain things. All of those things are part of the process. But if I'm going to sit back here and just complain about those things, I'm not generating anything but negativity. And now all of a sudden that rumbling turns into stopping the growth, stopping people from knowing Jesus. And that's what I want not to happen. Okay? I want to keep the great things that God is doing going. So, in an effort to do that, we are creating a team, and it's called the Life Care Team. This is just a team of people that we're able to delegate certain things to. So there's a time, especially when I was being raised, where the pastor did everything. Okay? Everything. And it's the reason most pastors burned out. It's the reason most of them had immoral failures. It's the reason most of them wanted nothing to do with ministry. And I would add this, it's the reason most of their kids wanted nothing to do with church. It's the reason we make fun of pastors' kids. There's a reason. And as I've always told you, there's an element of truth of every joke, okay? So we might say that, but it's because it's something that we've experienced. You guys, those days, as wrong as they were then, they're wrong as much today. We can't do that. This is what's happening in Acts chapter 6. They're saying, we can't handle all of this growth. And so they found people, the Bible says, of good reputation, good moral character. And they said, would you be the hands and feet of the apostles, of the prophets, of the teachers? Would you be the hands and feet of the pastors that you would go? And we've realized a lot of this stuff, that when people are in hospitals or people are experiencing death or people are experiencing sickness or tragedy, whatever those things, we need a group of people that come together and say, listen, we need to be the hands and feet of the church. And if we're not going to be the hands and feet of the church, then we're missing the point. If this is it, if this is our end all, then we're missing the point. Okay? And so we have to create this. So again, in an effort to be the hands and feet of Jesus, we're creating this team. And so if you're in this room and you just say, listen, I want to be a part of this, it's gonna be a wide variety of people, okay? Here's, to me, the one qualification. You ready for it? Are you willing? Are you available? Are you teachable? Are you flexible? It's not going to be a 9-to-5 thing. It's going to be a crazy in-the-middle-of-night thing. okay? It's just what it's going to be. But we have to do it so we take care of people because we are better together. Okay? You might be in this room, you're like, well, I have a lot of time on my hand. Awesome. Here's what you can do. You can do A, B, and C. Well, some of you are like, I don't have a lot of time on my hand, but I got a lot of money. Awesome. You can do A, B, and C. Some of you in this room is like, I got a specific talent. Great. Let's use that talent to better people, to be the hands and feet of Jesus to people. Okay? We have to be that. Acts 6:7 said this. I love this. This is the best part. They love the idea, and so it says. So God's message continued to spread. This is fascinating to me. The number of believers greatly increased in Jerusalem, so much that even pastors started getting saved. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. So much that even the priests were converted. What is happening? People who were in the church, people who thought they had it all together, were realizing they didn't have it together. And it says they didn't skip a beat. They continued to grow. And you know what the product of that growth is? You and I here today on a Sunday morning. People at Faith Lutheran today on a Sunday morning. People at First Baptist today. People at Hope Church right now. They are a product of people that rapidly continue to grow. We are a product of that. We are a product of Acts chapter 6 because they didn't get hung up on the grumblings and the murmuring and the complaining, and they decided to continue to move forward. And you and I are a product of that. Amen? We have to do this together. All right? So we're continuing this, and I'm looking at Genesis chapter 12. We've talked about Daniel. We've talked about Moses. Last week we talked about Ruth and Naomi. Here's one fascinating thing to me about Daniel. Daniel decided to do something early in his life, okay? As a teenager, he decided, I'm going to dedicate my life. I'm going to do this discipline. And in doing this discipline, I know that no matter what comes my way, this is going to be who I am. I'm going to be known for this. So when life got hard, how was Daniel known? Daniel was known as a guy who they could not say one bad thing about. I mean, could you imagine that type of reputation? That when someone echoes your name, they got to make up something negative about you. That's what it said about him. It says all the men were so mad at Daniel and the way he lived and the way he served and the way he did life that they had to make up stuff about him. Also says this about Moses when he was overwhelmed that his father-in-law came to him and said, hey, you got to stop doing what you're doing. You got to change up or you're going to burn out. We've talked about needing people in our lives that tell us when we need to stop doing things. Ruth and Naomi last week, where we talked about this relationship birthed really out of tragedy. And Ruth looking at her mother-in-law and saying, listen, I'm not going anywhere. That there's times in your life where God doesn't call you to leave, but God calls you to stay. Stay the course. And this week in Genesis chapter 12, we're looking at a guy by the name of Abraham. A guy that would have been a lot easier for him to stay, but God called him to go. And we're embracing this reality. And here's the reality. You have a story. And your story is your story. Nobody can take your story away from you. In this room right now are some people with an incredible past. I mean, incredible past. It's full of life, it's full of shame, it's full of guilt, it's filled with rejection, it's filled with all of these things. Inside this room, that the one common denominator of us meeting today is that you're at the 9 a.m. service, and that might be the only thing we got in common. Where you were raised, how you were raised, we don't got that in common. How many kids, if you have kids, if you're single, if you're choosing to be single, all of those things, we don't have those in common. What is the common denominator of us coming together if we're constantly looking and going, how can I connect to her story? How can I connect to his story? We're missing the point that God brings us together to write a new story. And that there's going to be moments in your life where God says, stay the course, stay true, persevere, keep going. And then there's going to be moments where God goes, it's time for you to go. It's time for you to move on. And you're like, but God, I'm comfortable right here. I know people here. I love it here. I love this town. I love this place. I love my job. I love the people. I love all of this. And God goes, it's time for you to go. Time for you to go. You know the two biggest pains in life? They say the pain of discipline and the pain of regret. You know why the pain of discipline? Because for me to start a discipline, I have to stop doing something else. That is hard. And the pain of regret, because you and I are forced to do this life every single day, and we can always look back and wish we would have done it differently. I have examples all in front of me, right, of people I do life with. Oh, I wish I would have done it like that. Oh, I wish I would have done it like that. I wish I could have said this, or I wish I would have done this. All of this regret, that if I'm still holding all on to all of this. And this is where Abraham is. In fact, here's been our key thought the whole last 4 weeks. Decisions that you make today determine the stories you tell tomorrow. Okay? This is what it comes down to. Hebrews chapter 12 says this. Let us fix our eyes, where? On Jesus, who is what? The author and the perfecter of our faith. So when God is asking you to go, and God is asking you to do something new, and God is saying it's time for you to transition. Listen, you want to put your faith not in what you know, not in what you experience, but in Jesus. Because He is the author. He is the perfecter, not of your abilities, not of your smarts, not of your wisdom, of your faith. And that sometimes the only thing you need to go is faith. Because on paper, it doesn't make sense. On paper, you're not making more money. On paper, it does hurt. It is uncomfortable. And so it makes no sense. The only thing that you have to go on is your faith. And it's the peace that God gives us. If you want to write a story the way that pleases God, then you have to let Him be the author of your story. If you're the one that's writing the story, or you're letting somebody else write the story, it's not going to be good. Genesis 12:1. The Lord said to Abram, leave your native country, your relatives, your family, father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. If you were raised in church, you probably know this passage. You know Abram before he was Abraham. He's 75 years old. He's worshiping the moon god at this point. And the God, the true God, comes to him and says, I need you to leave the familiar, and I need you to go to a land not flowing with milk and honey, not as greener on the other side. I need you to go to a land that I will show you at some point. Listen, you and I, we want security. You and I want affirmation that everything is going to be okay. At some point, you have to trust that God isn't just a God that writes on pages, that God is a God that is for you and not against you, and that God has placed you where you are, not because it's an accident, but because He has a plan. And at some point in your life, you have to trust that plan. And the moment that you trust the plan is the moment that God shows up and says, now you can go. See, a lot of times we stay in a place that we shouldn't be staying that long in because you and I are stubborn. And we're like, God, how long do I got to stay here? He says, well, it's kind of up to you. I was hoping you would have left years ago, but you are so stubborn. Which is the way of the people, right? 40 days it should have taken them to get to the promised land. It took 40 years. What is that? Stupidity. At some point, somebody had to go, like year 8, I think I've seen that mountain somewhere. Like, it looks very familiar. Yeah, it is. I've heard someone say, to step toward your destiny, you might have to step away from your security. In September of 2005, 14 years ago this week, 14 years ago, I'm saying it out loud and sounding astonished because I'm blown away at time and how time just keeps going faster. 14 years ago, I can tell you exactly where I was. I would call it a pivotal God moment in my life, and there was no worship team, there was no service, it was just me and the Lord, and I was on staff at a church and outside of Granite City, close to Edwardsville, and I heard God speak to me. And he said, "You're in a year of transition. Don't seek it out. I will show you where you're going. Don't find it yourself." And I was like, okay. And it didn't happen until December when Pastor Dobie called my family. And some of you know this story. Pastor Dobie called from Omaha, Nebraska. And literally when he called on a telephone, it's crazy, it rang during dinner. And Kelly answered it. And he said, "My name's Dobie Weasel from Omaha, Nebraska." And I just heard my wife go, "Who? Where?" And that conversation turned into moving my family. Well, at the time, it was just Libby was just a year old, and Carson and Jake. And we moved to Omaha, Nebraska to go on staff at a church. And the expectations, the excitement, I'm going to just do this interview to kind of gain some experience. But I really felt like the Lord said, "This is where I'm sending you." And it was very difficult. Omaha, Nebraska is it's a beautiful city. The church was incredible. We were out of our comfort zone. We left family. It was the first time we were by ourselves. There was no in-laws. There was no my parents. We didn't know anybody. It was just me, three kids, my wife. I was there a month before they got there. My wife said, "Listen, find a house for us to rent and make sure it's not a split level and make sure it's close to town." I found a split level about 25 minutes outside of town. It wasn't that I wasn't listening. It was like, there's nothing else. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. And I will say to you, it was the best 2 years of our life. And it was a land I didn't know, it was a place I didn't know, it was people I didn't know. And still to this day, 14 years later, the relationships that I have with the people that are there, 2 years, you guys, but it was such a season for us where God was growing us and God was showing us things that there's no way I am where I am today without those 2 years. It's impossible. But it took a step of faith to step away and to hear what God was saying. That, "Jamie, you are about to transition. God, I don't want to transition. I don't want to move. I don't want to do all these things." But he says, "Listen, step away from the comfortable. Step away from the security. Step away from what you know and follow me. Watch what I do." And see, listen, from outside perspective, from ministry perspective, from people's perspective, when they see from the outside looking in, they go, "Well, you're only there 2 years. You know, I don't know if it was very successful. I don't know if that was really..." You can't take my story away from me. I can't articulate enough. People can't take your story away. You know what happened. You know what God did in the middle of it. It's your story. Nobody can say it never happened. It's yours. This is what God was doing, but it's going to take faith. And if anybody had an excuse, it was Abraham. He's like, "Listen," because he continues. He says, "Here's my promise to you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. You will be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you. Whoever curses you, I'll curse. And all the people on the earth will be blessed through you." He's like, "Listen, God, how are you going to make me a great nation? I'm 75. My wife, she's old too. We don't have any kids. How is a great nation going to come from us? We've been trying. It's not happened. What is this?" It's Abraham going, "I'm good with the trying, but just nothing has come from it. What do I do in this moment?" He's like, "Listen, this is the promise. Here's the thing. You and I are not changed by the promises we make to God. We're changed by the promises God makes to us. I've made promises to God. It's not changed me. God, just get me an A. Next time I'll study. God, just change this into my favor. Next time I won't be so stupid with my finances. I've made these promises. They've not changed me. But when God speaks and says, Abraham, I know that you think that you don't know what's happening, but watch this. I'm in control. I will make you, what will come from you will be a great nation. And he's like, I don't have kids. He's like, but watch. Watch, you are so old, and I'm about to do something to where only people can go, that had to be God. You know what you and I have the tendency to do? We have the tendency to want to look good in front of people. The problem with that is we can't always look good while still making God look good. At some point, it's got to be, look what God just did. At some point, it's got to be like, look what he just did. There's no way I could have done it. I mean, I'm just saying, if somebody came in here, whoever's oldest in our church, said that they were pregnant, I'm just throwing out there, like, I don't know that I'm going, yeah, that was totally a cool, God had to do that. Yeah? How do we live to where I'm believing the promises of God? This is what Jesus said in Matthew 7. He says, anyone who listens to my teaching and follows it is wise. Like what? Like a person who builds a house on solid rock. Though the rain comes in torrents and the floodwaters rise and the winds beat against the house, it won't collapse because it's built on the bedrock. But anyone who hears my teaching and doesn't obey it is foolish. Like a person who builds a house on sand. When the rains and floods come and the winds beat against that house, it will collapse with a mighty crash. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, for he taught with real authority, quite unlike the teachers of the religious law. Here's what's happening. He's saying, as an individual, God is speaking to you, and you and I get the opportunity to either obey or disobey. Jesus comes together. He's got all these thousands of people that are listening. And Jesus just says, hey, listen, some of you, hey, you build your life on sand when it rains, when it gets hard, when life throws you a curveball. Listen, because your house looks like the other house that's on sand, that's on bedrock, it may look the same, but you're going to find out what kind of house you have by the foundation you have when the rains come. And he called us stupid. Right, I'm just throwing that out there. He said, some of you, you're smart. Some of you, not so smart. He divides the crowd instantly into two people, two groups. He says, those of you that listen and do, and those of you that listen and don't. He says, listen, you've just been divided into, it's the coach in this room, the teacher in this room that says they have a favorite athlete, a favorite student. It happens. A favorite kid. I mean, I know that we say like, no, I don't have a favorite kid, and we want to give everybody a stinking ribbon. But I'm just telling you right now, that's not true. I have a favorite athlete. I got a favorite player. She doesn't have a name, he doesn't have a name, but it is the one that shows up on time. It is the one that puts their work in. It is the one that I don't have to tell constantly, all the time, all the things to do, that they're taking initiative and they're leading others. What is that? That is my favorite player. What is that? It's obedience, you guys. Abraham went because he was being obedient. When it was easier to stay comfortable, to stay lazy, to do whatever it is that he wanted to do. But he said, but God said. And it says that we follow the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That if Abraham doesn't go, there is no Isaac and Jacob. Again, the second biggest pain of regret is what is happening because you disobeyed. What are people missing out of because you weren't obedient? What are people missing out of because God needs to use you? God has a plan for you. God has a story inside of you. And when I choose to obey, when I choose to hear and listen and to go, then people are changed. When I choose to ignore and choose the comfortable and choose the security and stay away, people are missing out. Like that, the weight of what it is in my obedience and disobedience happens in how I respond to it. I've said this to myself and to Kelly a lot. What if we never went to Omaha? What if we stayed where we were? Let's play a game of like, what would have happened? Well, I've already told you, I'm not here right now. This does not happen. Because at the end of 10 years of where I was at, I was done with dealing with church people, church problems, church stuff. My wife was done. She was not led well. No disrespect to the church we're at, but she wasn't led well. And for the next 2 years in Omaha, Nebraska, I was refreshed in how to live life and how to do the church and how to be a pastor and how to lead. I learned all of that in my uncomfortable place, in obedience. We learned all of those things. That's the reason I'm not here right now. I'm doing something else, probably doing something crazy. I don't know what I would be doing. I'm not doing this. Listen, you don't need to know the end of the story for you to start your story. All you need is faith right now to go. Stop trying to figure out what it's going to end like, how you're going to finish. Just do what you've been asked to do. Go where he's asked you to go. Verse 4 is life-changing. So Abram departed as the Lord had instructed. So Jerry Lenz departed as the Lord had instructed. So Andrew Thompson departed as the Lord had instructed. Put your name where Abraham's name is, where Abram's name is, where Sarah's name is. That when you obey and when you go, God things happen, not just good things. God things happen. And Hebrews 11 tells us about it. And it was by faith that Abraham what? Obeyed when God called him to leave home and to go to another land that God would give him as his inheritance. He went without knowing where he was going. And even when he reached the land God promised him, he lived there by faith. For he was like a foreigner living in tents. And so did Isaac and Jacob, who inherited the same promise. Listen to what I'm about to say to you. When you obey, it does not just affect you. When you go, it affects every single person associated with you. If you're a mom in this room, if you're a dad in this room, it doesn't just affect you when you obey. It affects your kids. You know why? Because my kids went to Omaha with me. They got to experience what it was like with mom and dad thriving, with mom and dad in obedience, with mom and dad doing what God had called them to do. It doesn't just affect you. It said it affected Jacob. It affected Isaac. Because the same promise to Abraham is the same promise to you and I. And it affects your kids. It's not just a promise that God just throws out promises. He says, listen, if you obey, if you go when I ask you to go, and you don't need to know the end of the story, just do what I've asked you to do. Watch. Watch how you'll be blessed. Watch how he orders your steps. Watch how he changes your situation. Guys, this is all birth in obedience. This is all birth in doing what God has asked us to do. Listen, some of you who are just wandering around, what is the point of life and what's the meaning of life? Listen. Here is the point of life, that God has a story and he wants you to be involved in the story. And that there's going to be moments where God says, start this discipline and stop this one. There's going to be moments where God says, stay the course. Stay in this relationship. Fight for it. And there's going to be moments where God goes, I'm about to do something new in your life. And for you to experience this newness of life, you need to leave. And listen, every single one of us in this room, we know this. We know this. I'm not telling you something that's blowing your mind. I'm telling you something that we need to be reminded of. We need to remember God has this. He's got your story. He's the author and the perfecter of your faith. The only thing that your faith is needed for right now is to go. 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 Would you stand with me this morning? God, I pray for every person in this room. God, those in this room that are maybe needing to make a decision right now. And the decision might be as simple as to stay or to go. The decision might be as simple as to they're living in disobedience and they know it. And they feel the pain of regret. They might be in this room and they know that they have a habit, maybe even a sin that they're doing and it's costing them. And maybe they feel guilt and shame today. God, I'm so grateful that your word says to cast our burdens on you, to cast our guilt, to cast our shame, that you will carry that. And we don't have to carry that on our own. But I'm thankful, God, that your promise is for us, that you love us where we are. God, I just pray right now in the name of Jesus that you be faithful and true to every single person in this room. If you could right now, if you're in this room, you just say, you know what? I got a situation. I don't need to know the situation. We don't need your social security number. We don't need to know your blood type. You're just in this room and you're just saying, listen, I got a situation. It's a struggle. It's difficult right now. If you could just acknowledge that by lifting up a hand right real quick. Just real quick. This is you being honest right now. This is you just keeping that hand up. God, I am grateful right now that you brought people to this place today because you love them. And God, I pray for every person with a hand lifted up right now. Whatever the situation, whatever the circumstance, God, I pray that they would see you in the middle of it. God, that you love them, that you're for them, you're not against them, and that your grace and your mercy. So God, right now, every single person, in the name of Jesus, meet them today.